Jim Flanagan.
Hi, Dr. Flanagan.
Hello.
All right. Why don't we go ahead and get started here? Thank you all for joining this evening's call. We're going to start the meeting with some guest speakers. We have Ari Mark from Star Care Medical, as well as Sam Ball from BioWound. We'll be talking a little bit about biologics tonight. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. This is our first time in this meeting. So for us, it feels a little bit like Groundhog's Day because we were just here, a few minutes ago. But it's a pleasure for us to speak to all of you who weren't here before. I'm gonna just introduce Sam, who will be able to tell you a little bit about some of the products that we have to offer and how we hope we can help you. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, nice to be here with everybody. Hopefully you can see my screen. My name's Sam Ball, and also with us is Brian Backlund, who also is part of our team of the BioWound Solutions StarCare Medical. And tonight I'm going to share a little bit of background on some cellular, acellular, and matrix-like products or CAMPs that we provide as sort of a one-stop shop for organizations like yourselves. So I've been in this business since 2009, and have seen it change quite a bit. And it's a really exciting times that we're in from a healing standpoint for all the providers that have gotten involved with wound care, as well as all the products that are available. What I wanted to start with you most importantly is about the efficacy and the treatment. It's all about the patient. And on the screen, you can see from the Journal of Wound Care back in July of 2021, Dr. Bill Tettelbach and colleagues mined the Medicare database looking at advanced tissues or these CAMPs that were utilized over a 3-year period of time. And what they found is that compared to standard of care, is that you had significant reduction in major amputations, minor amputations, ER visits, readmission to the hospital, and you had a significant overall better healing rates when you utilize these advanced tissues for the healing for chronic non-healing wounds versus standard of care, which is offloading debridement, good nutrition, and using good dressings. Also, at the same time, over in membranes in 2021, some of your colleagues over on the other side of the pond in Europe published looking. They looked at just all the studies that are out there in articles and posters, and they found there are over almost 1,200 patients in different articles that have been published on amniotic tissues. And probably about 600 patients in posters. And they found that the efficacy in full closure of wounds over a 12 to 15 week period of time was anywhere from 86% total closure rate versus 90% in the cured rate. So bottom line, I can tell you that these products work, the amnion products, the 510K products, collagen products, and also dermal matrix products work. It's just there's no head-to-head trial saying one works better than the other. That hasn't been conducted yet. So in looking at one of the products that may be unfamiliar to you is a product called Dermax. It's Q4238. It's a dermal matrix allograft. So if any of you out there have used a product by the name of TheraSkin, this would be an equivalent to like a TheraSkin where it's preserves collagen and elastic tissue fibers while maintaining the open channels, which the patient's own cells can migrate, proliferate, and help to form new blood vessels. It's great for deeper tunneling wounds. It's thicker. If any of you have used an umbilical cord product, it's thicker. And it takes when you before you put it on, you soak it in saline for about 10 seconds. And it becomes a little more pliable. When the patient returns or when you return to see the patient in 1 week, more than likely you'll still see remnants of this graft, that you'll need to debride out and then apply a second graft or third, depending on what number of graft you are on. You can see here the sizes range anywhere from a 2x2 to an 8x16. The MUE on this product is 120 units. That's the largest size wound you can treat. It has a 5-year strip shelf life and it's ambient tissue temperature storage. Now, the amniotic materials that we're going to share with you tonight are probably most likely the amniotic tissues that you've been using in terms of the handling characteristics. Two of the products that we have that we're sharing with you tonight are a dual layer amnion, and one is a tri-layer amnion. So the first dual layer amnion, it comes from BioLab Sciences. The product's called Membrane Wrap, and it's exactly like the other amniotic tissues that you've been using, where when you lay this amniotic tissue into the host on the wound, it creates a chemotactic reaction that recruits the patient's own stem cells to help proliferate and restore and regenerate and granulate tissue. It comes in anywhere from a 2x2 to a 4x8, and the MUE on this product is 100 square centimeters. Now, our triple layer amnion is called SirGraft TL, and again, it has a little bit greater strength, a little bit easier of handling. It's got a 5-year shelf life like the others. And the bottom line, you can show in a poster study they did that, over an 8-week period of time, that about 90% of the wounds in the diabetic foot ulcer wounds were healed. Now, these are probably aren't the type of wounds that you see that probably take a little bit more and a little bit larger sizes, but bottom line, you're getting all of the growth factors, proteins, cytokines, chemokines needed to help jumpstart and the wound healing process. So this is SirGraft, a triple layer, a little bit thicker, but when I share and show physicians and clinicians the difference between a single layer, a double layer, and a triple layer, most can't tell the difference just from the naked eye. Lastly, of the amnions that we have is Restoragen, and that's Q4192. Again, it's a double layer amnion, same type of properties, same mechanism of actions, and sizes anywhere from a 2x2 to a 4x8 that you can utilize. These products are all definitely 100% covered in the Medicare environment. But before you would attempt to utilize and order these tissues, you want to make sure that you run this through the insurance verification program to double check that the patient is still indeed has their Medicare active, especially their Part B benefits, to make sure they haven't switched over to a Medicare Advantage. And then if they have, we check to see if the Medicare Advantage will cover the tissue. Probably about 60% of the time, maybe 50-50 that they will or will not. And then also just to make sure that they're not on a PPO, or if they are, what are the criteria for that? A lot of these tissues are not covered on that, and takes about anywhere from 1 to 5 years for the tissues to get on some of the PPO plans. What we have seen is from the insurance verification is that once you submit this in, the name, the date of birth, all the insurance information, when you need this, it's turned around in a 24 to 48 hours, and it will tell you the coverage, if there's out-of-pay co-pays, and if the secondary is covered or is not covered. So this is the key. This is like your insurance ticket, that if you get a green to cover and for some reason it's not covered, then the manufacturers will make good and give a credit back. Now, if you want to order, once you've approved this through your internal processes, you would send an order to service@biowound.com. In that order, you would put the account, obviously called AmeriWound, the tissue name and number of tissues per size that are requested. So you need 5 2x3s of the Dermax, the date needed, and the shipping address. We don't ship to SNFs or long-term care facilities due to they get lost. We can ship to FedEx or UPS locations, as most of you are on the road and can pick those up. In our last call, there are a few manufacturers that will ship to the home. We'll work with Mendy and your team on that. Usually, in order to ship to the home, most oftentimes the NPI needs to be associated with the account of AmeriWounds. And probably in this case, the organization is so big that would not be the case. But the 510K devices we can ship to homes. And there are some instances where we can ship to home, and we'll work with Mendy and your organization to clarify who that would be. Lastly, this is just when you apply it, it's no different than what you've currently been using. The better debridement you get, even at, from the first to the last application, the more you debride the bleed, the faster these will heal. It sounds counterintuitive. Even when you've got good granulation tissue going, you still want to debride the bleed to get rid of bioburden, biofilm, again, trick the wound into an acute healing phase. As well as, you know, that it's a great way for the wound to adhere into it. You open it in, you place, you put a non-adherent dressing over it like a Dapic. You Steri-strip it down because you need to have be able to document to Medicare how you secured the graft in place, and then you want to use your other dressings and. To wrap the wound or to bolster the wound and then wrap it and dress it and, you know, repeat in 1 week. So with that, due to time, as you have many other things to close, I'll stop there and I'll take any questions if you have any on those different camps that I shared with you tonight.
Thank you very much. That was fantastic. Certainly open the floor out for any questions, any comments.
So I'll
If
say
you've
this.
reached the maximum,
Go
if
ahead.
you've reached the maximum number of applications, can you switch products?
So the only time I'd recommend switching products is if you had good medical justification, your notes documented why you're switching. If you were in an amniotic class, I definitely would not, you would not recommend switching to a bilayer to a bilayer or a trilayer to a trilayer. You would want to maybe switch from an amniotic tissue to maybe a 510K device, like a BioConnect that's out there, or a PuraPly. Whatever's on your formulary. But you definitely want to switch classes of grafts. If you're going to stay in the amniotic category, you'd want to switch, and you switched and you had medical justification and you were the provider, so you would only know. You would want to go from like a single layer to a bilayer or a single layer to a trilayer, but you wouldn't want to go from, you know, single to single or dual to dual or triple to triple. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And anytime going over the 10, you definitely want to have good medical notes and for why you would be doing that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question. Any else? Don't be shy. But we get it. I know a lot of you have utilized these products for before, and you've seen the handling characteristics and how well they work. One of the most important things is you're documenting that each week you document the post-debridement size. When you lay the tissues in, you want to be documenting the size of the tissue that was used, and you want to put in the tissue ID. For the for to for and I come from a very conservative background in documentation, and when you put those tissue IDs in, it's great documentation. And you want to use the most size of the closest to the proper size of the wound. Well, we want to thank you for having us on. We really appreciate the time that we could share this information. We look forward to working with you in any way, shape, we can. We have multiple people to help us out on the team. And in future, within the California market, we have some Medi-Cal, managed Medi-Cal options for the California market that we'll be sharing at a later date.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us and sharing all of this information. And really what it comes down to is helping our patients. So appreciate it. Thank you very
Absolutely.
much.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful night.
Take care.
You as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All the best.
All right, Melissa, I will turn the floor over to you. I know you have some things on your agenda to discuss.
Hi, good evening, everybody. We are wrapping up the MIPS season for 2023. Unfortunately, with the final submission, we did not get the compliance we needed for 2023, especially with the AFib and the CAD medications. So all the providers for this year, we are asking or requiring that you include the dementia, Alzheimer's, falls diagnoses, CAD, and AFib when adding new patients, because the other thing we're seeing is the patients that are expiring or coming off service, we're not going to be able to meet the numbers to submit for criteria for 2024 if we do not keep up with adding the proper diagnoses if the patients have those diagnoses. So as you're admitting and adding new patients onto your service, please look at their face sheets and keep adding the proper diagnoses. Only two diagnoses are not for new patients, or that's not acceptable. All providers have to participate in MIPS. They do actually, CMS does look at all of our registered providers and each TIN, which is each state. And if we don't have full participation, that could lead to a penalty. So if a provider's just putting muscle weakness, difficulty walking, generalized weakness, that's not going to be sufficient this year. Remember to complete your social drivers of health. That is a requirement for MIPS. You're going to see, in addition to just regular auditing, we're going to keep sending you out reminders every week. To help keep up on the medications or any requirements that we need from you. We will continue to help you on the back end, but we just don't have the manpower to pull all of the information. So look out for MIPS information that will be required from you. If you need EMR access, ask your regional managers to get that for you for your facilities. It makes obtaining this information 100 times easier. The other issues that I've seen over the last couple months is I've had CNOs, VPs of clinical, owner operators reach out as far as product documentation guidelines that are meeting CMS requirements. I will send out documentation requirements that meet those guidelines tomorrow. Some examples are alginate. Being used on wounds with minimal to no drainage. Foam dressings being used on wounds with dry stable eschar, wounds with minimal to no drainage. Those are not acceptable guideline, or those are not acceptable uses for those products. Wound gel being used on wounds with moderate to large drainage. So take a look at the guidelines. If you need to, reach out to me. Our documentation has to meet CMS criteria, as well as our providers' formularies. So those are my two topics for this evening. That's all I have.
Right. I'd like to chime in on a couple of things. One, I'll start with the MIPS. We years ago, about 3, 4 years ago, did a great job in our submission of MIPS, and we received a nice little increase bump, which we passed on to providers at the same percentage that we received, which was about 4 to 6%, depending on the state. As a result, that went into the different fee schedules across every territory that we had. We are potentially in danger going the opposite way. The way MIPS works is you can go anywhere from a high of 10% increase to a high of a 10% decrease in reimbursement. So if that happens, we're not going to get 10%, but I mean, either way, but not this year at least, but that does get passed back and it changes the economics for all of us. So highly encourage everyone to be as cooperative and complete with the MIPS requirements that Melissa and her team forward out to providers, and stay in contact with that and make sure that you're adhering to it. Because if you're not, all it takes is one provider really screwing it up for the whole territory. So everyone's got to cooperate. We really implore everyone to do that. And hopefully, at worst case, we come out at break even on that this year. But we won't know that yet. And then going forward, we certainly, I think we would all prefer to get an increase, a bump. So please keep that in mind as you're going through your 2024. And you got to stay up with it, because once you fall behind, it's hard to catch up. But it's pretty straightforward to keep up with it if you're doing it regularly. So that's it for my say so on MIPS. On the biologic side, the reason we had this presentation, we may have one or two more, is we were primarily reliant on one provider or one company for the Medicare non-skilled, and then another on the Medicaid side. We're diversifying that and expanding it. There have been some issues that have come up with one of the manufacturers. Not so much the efficacy of the product, but how they were handling things financially. And so there was some scrutiny placed by CMS on audits and things, and we just don't want to get swept up in that. We don't want to be solely reliant on it. Plus, they change these products every, few months. And we've got to stay on top of that to see who's providing the best products and who's also paying the best for the associated products that are comparable. So we are sticking with, instead of sticking with one or two, we're going to have a few options, and we are going to have someone that we're going to add on to be a coordinator to keep that in line and notify providers of which products and under which company. But the IVR process will virtually be identical no matter who it is, which is the insurance verification process. And so we won't order a product until we know we get an approval from the appropriate payer. So that won't change, but there'll just be a broader range of selections. And that's why the presentations will be made by the different biologics companies, because every one of them is going to tout theirs, obviously. And then we'll have to make some internal clinical decisions, which is the number one criteria. And then the second is the economics associated with it. Unfortunately, in some cases with the Medicaid, excuse me, the margins are so darn slim that in some states, if we ordered it, we'd even lose money just before we did anything. So, and we went through that a little bit with one of the companies. We got that finally resolved, but we don't want to repeat of that. So we're going to monitor this very carefully, but hopefully profitably. And then last but not least, one of the things that Melissa stresses and talks about is in your documentation, and it is really critically important that the documentation be concise, to the point, and accurate. and that things aren't missed or things are too and Melissa, you might want to talk a little bit more about this broad to where you can interpret things a lot of different ways, and I'll let Melissa address that. Facilities go through annual surveys by surveyors who are hired, and they seem to have the intent and purpose of finding problems with the facilities. And so facilities are very paranoid to make sure that they don't come up on the short end of that and not provide exactly what the surveyors are looking for under the guidelines that are established and updated annually. The results of those surveys and why facilities take these so seriously is it could increase their reimbursement. They get paid a daily per diem, so they could get a hike. It could decrease it. They could get penalized. They could even be closed because of the results of those surveys. 25% of the survey is on wound care. Which is why facilities are exceptionally paranoid about the wound care documentation. And it's not just the provider piece, although that's a big contributor to it. It's also the day-to-day wound care that the staff are providing. But the documentation is very telling in that regard. And if a facility gets dinged because of a survey on wound care, the ultimate result is the wound care company involved gets fired from that facility. So we don't want to mess up in any way, shape, or form in that regard and contribute to that. Now, they could get dinged for other things. That's not our fault. But if they're dinged because of what we've done, then they interpret that as being our fault. And to illustrate how serious this is, think of it as a 100-question exam. And when the surveyor comes through, every time they find something that they find problematic, usually in the documentation, that becomes an F tag or a federal tag that they issue against the facility. So on a 100-question exam, so every one of those means they get a 1% haircut for the entire year on any and every patient day. So it's very serious to them, and it should be. So we just want to make sure that we always come out on the right side of that and say the right amount, don't say too much, but get it right. Melissa, you want to just add to that?
So depending on the scope and severity, it might not even be something that our doctors are necessarily doing wrong, but they'll still terminate. So if it's a G level or an IJ, they have to abate that rather quickly in order to stop the civil money penalties that are accumulating either by the hour or in a lump payment. So they'll terminate services. So we have to just be diligent in our practices and making sure that we're following, the guidelines that are set forth. We might not always understand them because long-term care might be new to our providers. So if you need to navigate that space, please reach out to myself, reach out to our clinical team. We're very well versed in long-term care if you don't understand those nuances. The documentation needs to be concise to the date of service. We can't be putting a bunch of comments in our notes that might be detrimental to the facility. So we need to be good partners with them. Because I have been on the other end, where I wrote plans of correction that have terminated either the doctor and requested a new doctor, or terminated a wound care company as part of a plan of correction. So it does happen, and it happens frequently.
That's why we're so diligent on these audits and all of these other things, because it's very critically important to get this right.
Do you have any questions about any of those things? The last thing that I also wanted to bring up is a message from Lauren. Basically, just want to remind everybody that there are two things that do require your attention if you haven't done so already. The first is being the annual HIPAA training. And recognizing and going over that. There was a link sent out to your email. I know in some folks that link may have gone to your spam filter. So do make sure that gets checked and completed. In the years past, we may not have been as diligent with upkeep with that, but Lauren is making sure that we're staying on track with that. That is due by March 1st. So, if you haven't done that, time is running out. The other is that there is an updated employee handbook, that was also sent, via email. There should be a, right signature link for that. You'll need to go ahead and, sign off on that, once you've had a chance to read it. So, if you haven't gotten those, or you haven't completed that, please do so. If there are any difficulties or issues getting it done, please email Lauren or myself. Any questions about any of the topics discussed tonight? All right, then. If nobody has any other questions, I thank you all for joining us this evening, and good night to everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Good
Night.
night.
Good night.